Simon and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Yeah, I feel like we might need a round of who's the douche. I mean, Yurko's got a story from the weekend, actually, where he thought maybe he was being douchey, but I don't think he was. I think he taught someone a valuable lesson.
That's
right. Like, at some point, I want to kind of get into that. And then somebody on Twitter was also asking, Tyler Glasnow and these players, I mean, like, who's the douche? They're kind of being douchey right now. I sort of get Glasnow's gripe. I don't have much sympathy for you. I think it's bizarre that MLB has decided, like, mid-season to go on this crusade now when this is not a new thing. We've been talking about it for years. They've had data to support kind of like the theories that have been out there. They could have been analyzing this, looking at this. They could have been talking to their own players. Trevor Bauer has sort of outed himself and them. You know, and it's like, you guys, you could have done something about this. You didn't have to wait till right now.
It's your responsibility to adjust. Period.
Oh, you mean the pitchers?
Pitchers' responsibility to adjust. That's it.
The good news is we don't think this is going to affect the Cubs and the White Sox too much. If you're a fan here in Chicago, like, you know, I don't know that any of their pitchers are too overly reliant. Now, does it seem like 75 or 80% of pitchers in the league are using something? It kind of does.
Yes.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
Let's bring in our buddy Chuck Garfine, who joins us once a week. He's going to get ready for pre and post later today on NBC Sports Chicago. As the White Sox go for a series win against the Rays. First two games have been great. Connor McKnight's pregame right here on your radio home for the White Sox starts at 12:30, so you get an extra 30 minutes of Carmen and Yurko today. We still have 90 minutes to go. 1:10 first pitch on the south side, and it is going to be a glorious day for baseball. What's up, Chuck?
Not much. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. First two games have been great, that's for sure.
Yeah, and just for the record, I do not use foreign substances on the set.
No, not at all.
Totally legit.
Do you know, I don't know if you saw this earlier in the week. We've talked about it on the air. We put it on Instagram. I bought some Spider Tack, and it's funky stuff, Chuck. I mean, it is. You guys should do this and have a little fun because it'd be a good TV thing, too. Have Ozzy and Frank get their thoughts on it. But, like, it's crazy sticky. And, like I said, the videos are on my Instagram feed, at Carmen DeFalco 5. But it was a fun experiment, and we don't normally use sticky stuff either, but we got it here in the studio now. And it is sticky, Chuck.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of it about how sticky it is. I spoke with Carlos Rodon yesterday about this, and he said he doesn't use any foreign substances, never has. And Tony La Russa, pregame yesterday, said they were aware of MLB wanting to crack down on this here this season, and they talked about it during spring training. Like, this is something that was discussed in spring training. So, I'm not in the clubhouse. I'm not going to be, like, able to find out, even if I was in the clubhouse, who's doing it and who's not. But from what Tony said, the Sox were well prepared for what was coming here. So why other teams are so blindsided by this is surprising to me.
Is it still a little I don't know if unfair is the right word, but I mean, I guess I'll use it for lack of finding one better. Like, is it somewhat unfair that MLB is doing this mid-season? Is this a change that should have happened in an off-season?
Probably, but I don't know all the inner workings to this, but if there was like a memo already sent about this, that, hey, this was going to happen, well, what more do you want? Other than saying, well, all these rules and these cracking down on it was maybe looking back on it, and it's easy to look back on it, maybe MLB should have cracked down on this much further in the off season than just say give a warning. I think the warning was just kind of like, really, are they really going to do this? Well, then they saw, it's important for there to be fans in the seats. It's important for there to be home runs and offense and balls in play. And then when the first 2 months of the season happen and the opposite has happened throughout the game, now MLB is stepping in and trying to really do something about it. And we are seeing the domino effect with certain pitchers like Tyler Glasnow, who was clearly using something that is now deemed a banned substance and leading to a suspension. And he claims that that led to an injury. So this was a messy situation to begin with. Yeah, probably they should have said, okay, you can do it the rest of this season, but next year, here are the suspensions. But that's not what they did, and this is where we're at.
Chuck Garfine's our guest on the Corona Hotline. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. And, of course, you can watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv, or download the Twitch app. The Madrigal news yesterday was, I think, news that we all sort of feared but sort of suspected was coming. I mean, it looked bad when it happened. It's another bad injury for this team. I guess the only bright spot is that Aloy has been cleared for baseball activity and that Aloy and Robert might be back at some point, right?
It's that, and then just look at the depth this White Sox team has. I love Nick Madrigal, but it's only been a few games, but you don't miss him so much when you've got Danny Mendick playing the way he's playing. I mean, he drove in the big run. He got actually two runs scored on that play because, you know, when you want to call him maybe Nick Madrigal with a little more power, but doesn't have obviously the two-strike approach that he has. But Mendick's a very solid second baseman. Dallas Keuchel has said he'd be a starter on almost every team in baseball at second base. So you lose Madrigal. The Sox have been losing guys left and right, but they are staying afloat and winning games. And here they have a chance. They win today. Everyone's saying, oh, the Sox can't beat anybody. They haven't played anyone good. Okay, if they win today, they're going to take 2 of 3 from the Jays and the Rays in the last week, with the Astros coming next. So despite all the injuries, and it stinks losing these guys, and it does sound like Jimenez is coming back. We'll see about Robert. This sounds like a very, very good, extremely resilient team. And what we're finding with so many injuries in baseball this year, what's it going to take to get to the finish line? Depth and resilience. True. And the White Sox have both of them.
Yeah. Well, we could say post All-Star game that we're probably going to see Eloy back.
Now, when you say post All-Star game, you mean after, like right after the All-Star game?
No, after the All-Star game, before
August
1. Before August 1.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to answer that one, but if you would have told me in spring training after he got hurt that he'd be back in the middle of August, I'd be like, can I, you know, sign me up for that. I want to have that in marker and Sharpie, and I'd love it. So that is looking like a possibility. It's at least 4 weeks until a rehab assignment occurs. And so say that rehab assignment is in the middle of July and he's in Charlotte. I mean, I can't see him just 2 weeks and he's up, but who knows? So let's push it off for a month. He's in, say, and that's assuming he begins a rehab assignment in 4 weeks. Middle of August feels right to me, but there's no official timetable. I'm just throwing stuff against the wall here, so do with that with what you want.
Sox are the only AL team whose starters' ERA is below 3. I mean, depth and starting pitching. It's been the key to this whole thing, and it could be 3 months from now, Chuck.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge story, what the White Sox rotation is doing. Their ERA is a half run better than the next team in the American League, and that's the Rays, who now lost Tyler Glasnow. That is tremendous, tremendous to get that kind of production from your starting rotation. Remember how great the Cleveland Indians rotation was supposed to be this year? They're almost 2 runs more than the White Sox. They're at 4.76 as an ERA for their team, and Shane Bieber is on the injured list right now. How they're 4.5 games behind the White Sox, it should be 10, so credit to the Indians for hanging in there. I can't believe it.
Neither can I.
But
with that offense and the injuries they've had, I can't believe it either.
You know what? And I want to add one other thing. There's so much talk about where's the offense this year, and they got to do something about the sticky substances. That's the reason for this. You know what the biggest reason to me is why offense is down? Have you seen the lineups around Major League Baseball this year? Look at the Tampa Bay Rays. Look at that lineup. There is nothing that special there. Certainly 6-9, 5-9. They have the 3rd most runs in baseball. Their batting average is like 233.
Yeah, I know. They get on base a lot. They do get on base.
I mean, the Indians, the Mariners, I mean, just up and down throughout baseball, there's very few stacked lineups. The White Sox, if everyone's healthy, is stacked. But look what they're throwing out there right now, and they're just finding ways to win. Why is offense down? To me, that's the biggest reason.
The Astros are stacked, and they'll have to deal with that the next 4 after today. But first things first.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few good offenses, but Tigers. I mean, I can just start going up and down the league. Orioles, you know. The Yankees are supposed to have a great offense. They're like 3rd or 4th from the bottom.
Chuck, enjoy game three of the series today, and we will talk to you next week. Thanks as always, buddy.
All right, so me and Pods on the pregame show, we're going to break down Adam Engel's swing.
Sweet, I like it.
Oh, we're going to – it's amazing how it has evolved in the last 4 years. You would not believe it.
I like
that. We're going to be at the demo wall. We're going to be breaking it down around at 12:30 on NBC Sports Chicago. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Sounds good, buddy. Talk to you next week. There's Chuck Garfine, at Chuck Garfine on Twitter. Yeah, Engel's got sneaky power, man. Three home runs. He doesn't look it, but, like, he's got power.
A little pop in the bat.
Yeah. Let's say hi to – how about Paul and Valpo on ESPN 1000? Hey, Paul.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Quick question. I appreciate the positivity on Rodon, and obviously he's been unbelievable. But I'm hearing he's the number two starter in the playoffs. He's a Cy Young candidate, which he obviously is. But I look at the last 2 years, he's thrown a combined 31 innings. And last time he made, I think, anything over 20 starts was 2016 or 17. How is he going to finish this year on a regular rotation? And it's not like they can just skip him every once in a while. He's still going to way exceed what he's thrown the last couple to rely on him being a playoff stud without getting hurt.
Fingers crossed, I guess, Paul. It's valid. I mean,
is he at 11 starts or 12 right now?
He's got 11 starts.
11 starts.
He's made the last two seasons combined, he made 9 starts.
Well, he's past that.
Yes, he is.
Listen, but the thing is, he was a horse at NC State, right? Like, that's a situation where if in September he's still pitching the way he's pitching right now, you don't even have to worry about it. You just go out there and take your start every fifth day, or, you know, if it's in the playoffs. Like, I guess the thing is, you probably wouldn't use Rodon on short rest in the playoff series.
Probably not.
But they won't need to because they've got 4 or 5 guys they can go to. Like, that's a problem you don't even think about until September if he's showing signs of wear and tear.
Like, yeah, you know, that he doesn't get hurt and that this is it. He's finally found himself. He leads the league in strikeouts per nine, and he's giving up the fewest hits per nine. I mean, think about that combination. That leads to a 6-2 record with a 189 ERA. Let's say hi to Rob in Plainfield. What's up, Rob?
Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, I just had a point. You guys gave a percentage of 75% of the foreign substance thing. How would these pitchers feel if 75% of the batters were suspected of a foreign substance in their bat?
Like cork in their bat or something?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like I said, that's a big percentage. And another quick point also is, do you think these position players, like if I was a batter now, I would be pretty upset, you know? And you think they know, and they're just not saying nothing because it's giving their pitches an edge as well?
Yes, yes. Rob, I think that's the answer. I think they do know. I think they know that their pitchers rely on it. You know, look, it's like you could criticize some of the Astros pitchers for not blowing the way. You're not going to blow the whistle on your teammates. Dallas Keuchel's not going to blow you. They knew what was going on. And I mean, you know, but what are they going to do? The pitcher's going to be upset. Look, you know, they figure, hey, I'm not involved. Doesn't matter for me. I'm pitching. I'm not hitting. I'm in the American League. I'm not playing offense. But they're not going to break bad. And even if they suspect it happening in other places, they're probably not going to say anything because their team's got some system in place stealing signs.
Everybody knew what was happening, and they were just allowed to go ahead and do whatever they wanted.
Do people realize?
Everybody knows that this was going on.
Are people like finally realizing that for the better part of 100 years, everybody in baseball has tried to cheat?
Yeah.
Like, can we stop with the, oh, he's a cheater, or he did this, or he did that? Like, this is decades worth of stuff, of stories.
Everybody wants to gain an advantage.
Decades. The Dodgers were stealing signs. The Giants were stealing signs. Tony La Russa implemented a system at Old Comiskey Park. They'd use greenies. They'd use steroids. They'd use amphetamines. They'd use spitballs.
Cork in the bag.
Like, for every decade for the last 100 years.
How about the Super Bowls in the end of the bat?
Right.
When the top came off and all of a sudden there were Super Bowls everywhere.
Baseball players have been cheating and they will continue to try and cheat. And we will be right back.
Zoning out on that Zoom meeting? Zoom. Find out what Carmen and Yurko were talking about. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Minutes from now, you know who we're talking to? David Faraday, the one and only from NBC Sports, to preview the U.S. Open out at Torrey Pines. Primetime golf this weekend for a major. I love it.
Do we have a golfer or are we not doing that?
You guys probably didn't.
I'm going to lean on you, Merck.
No, I thought about it.
And okay. I'm going to lean on you and you, Yerk and Merck. I'm going to lean on you
now
guys.
Now we're going who we want to win the tournament, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, we'll do that in about 15 after
whenever
we talk
you're
to
ready. I'm
Faraday.
Ready.
We got to play Sylvie's Q&A with Matt Nagy yesterday. That was great. We talked about it before their show when we taped Crosstalk Unhinged. The latest Working Blue podcast is up on the ESPN Chicago app. It's on the Carmen and Yurko page and the Waddle and Sylvie page. It was great yesterday. I mean, there were some great stories, some great hardcore nuts and bolts sports stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvie did get his question into and asked to Matt Nagy. I still don't know what Matt Nagy said or how he answered it.
I'd love to sit and chat about that.
Yeah, we will. We're on to 12:30, too. No Greeny today. We're on a little bit extra because we have White Sox baseball starting at 12:30, 1 o'clock, 1:10, first pitch for Sox and Rays today. So, yeah, we definitely got to play that.
Yeah, I'd love to play that. I can't wait.
Do these salespeople like...
It's Grand Central Station.
You know we're doing a radio show?
But like, at some point, that we might have to close that door.
Salespeople coming in like waving.
All we have to do is close the door, Carm.
Yeah, close the door.
My love, close the door.
Like, do you know there's a radio show going on? Like, we're live on the air.
They're impervious. Don't worry about it, Ken.
Impervious?
Yes,
I don't think
impervious.
That's the word.
That they don't know we're doing a radio show?
I don't think impervious is the word you're looking for there.
What is it?
They are...
ambivalent?
they might be a little ambivalent.
Is that the word?
Just don't care really what we're...
Yeah.
Who may be correct. They may not be aware to... they're not allowing fluid to pass through.
Yeah, that's impervious.
Yes.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Or unable to be affected by. There's more than one definition.
Okay. Yeah, but
unable to be affected
that sort
by...
Of fits with the fluid mechanics definition as well, just used in a slightly different way.
Yeah, I would say like...
Oblivious is the word I think you should probably use.
Oblivious.
They're oblivious.
I would say that...
Not impervious, they're oblivious.
If Carm were able to focus despite all that was going on, he would be impervious.
Exactly, I'd be impervious.
To what was happening.
But meantime,
clearly
there are people
we're
like jumping up and down, like waving and...
You're not being able to be penetrated. Oh boy, what a shame. Are not able to be heard. Impervious, an example of fabric that does not allow any liquid to pass through. An example of impervious is a figurine made out of indestructible materials.
Yeah.
All right, I appreciate that, Carm.
There you go.
No,
I'm a wordsmith.
But you never stop learning.
That's right.
You never stop learning.
You know math, I know the English language.
Hey, Carmen taught me something today.
Here's some math for you. A couple things here.
And oblivious. Then
oblivious. But honestly, we will play the Sylvie exchange with Matt Nagy. Matt Nagy's... Again, the answer is so
it's so out of whack. It is so
it's so crazy.
Not saying anything.
It's so crazy.
Or saying things and saying, oh, he's our number one quarterback, but we didn't make him a promise. But you told him he's the number one quarterback.
As Waddle says, Waddle calls it word salad, and I love that. This is like from the Seinfeld episode, the big salad. Like, this is the big word salad. Like, we honestly need to play.
It's garbage.
You need to play Billy Madison, you know. What you've just said is the most idiotic thing. Like, you are awarded no points. You flunk, and may God have mercy on your soul. We are all dumber for now having heard. Like, it is that crazy. So we'll play that because we're on till 12:30 today. We will do it. Here's some math for you. We told you about Glasnow's drop-off in spin rate.
Yep.
Bauer's upset about it, even though he's the guy that, like, basically – called everybody out a few years ago. And he's like, well, if they're doing it, I'm going to do it. Like, he's Barry Bonds. He's like, well, wait a minute. If McGuire and Sosa are doing it, then I'm going to do it. I'm better than them. I'm the best player. Like, if they're going to do it, I'm going
to
do it.
And he did it to the nth degree.
Bauer's first 11 starts. You guys ready?
Yeah.
2.07 ERA, a 145 batting average against, and 11.6 strikeouts per nine. Bauer's last three starts? 4.74 ERA, 267 BA against, 9.5 strikeouts per nine. So it's all crumbling down for some of these guys.
Little bit of a difference.
You know, one guy who's not like a big spin rate guy, I don't think he's cheating, I don't think he needs it to thrive, is Jacob DeGrom. I just think he's great. Like, flat out great. His ERA is almost a full run better than the next qualified pitcher in MLB. Think about that as we are in the middle of June, folks. His ERA is 0.56. Kevin Gausman is next at 1.43. And then Lance Lynn is third. How about that in the AL?
That's nice.
At 1.51. Those are the qualified pitchers. 0.56 is this guy's ERA. His ERA plus is 6.86.
It comes crashing tonight.
You think so?
Tonight it comes crashing down, yes.
686.
Yeah.
He leads the league in hits per nine, 3.7. Strikeouts per nine, 14.5. Strikeout to walk ratio, 12.88. He's driven in more runs at the plate than he's allowed. He's allowed 4 runs this year. And I think Pedro Martinez's 2000 season is like the greatest pitching season of my lifetime. And I mean, he had the lowest ERA in the AL since the mound was lowered. He was the only, I think he was the only pitcher in the bigs that year, Yerk, with an ERA below 2.5, and his ERA was 1.74. That's how great the disparity was between he and everybody else. It was the height of the steroid era. It was 2000. Like, I think that's the finest pitching season of my lifetime. Other ones that I jotted down that, like, are probably in consideration, Maddox's truncated 94 season. His season was as good as the offensive seasons in the strike year that Bagwell and Frank had.
Yeah.
Like, his season was that good. His ERA was like 1.5 or something that year. It was crazy. Roger Clemens' 1990 season, and then Clayton Kershaw's 2014 season. Those were the ones that came to mind when I thought about it, but I think Pedro's 2000 season is the greatest pitching season I've ever seen in my life. And I think if this guy continues this, it's going to be number one, right? I mean, I don't know that he can continue this.
I think it comes to an end tonight, crashing down.
All right, what were you going to say, Merck?
I know it's before probably your baseball primetime years.
Which one you got?
Dwight Gooden, 1985. Oh,
that's a good call.
24-4, 153 ERA, 16 complete games, 8 shutouts, 276 innings pitched, 268 strikeouts.
That's an excellent call, Merck, and I do remember it. I mean, I was young, but shame on me for probably not thinking of that one. That's a very good call. You know, good. Was that 84 or 85?
84 was his rookie year, which he won rookie of the year at 17-9, and then 85
was... Yeah, 85 was the real dominant one. That's an excellent call. Like, these are some of the great pitching seasons of the last 40 years, and like DeGrom's on a pace to to just fly by them in terms of how dominant and successful he's been. It's pretty remarkable. Go ahead, Meller.
I was just going to say, the gold standard is that 2000 season by Pedro.
It's the best.
It was in the height of the steroids era.
Yeah, and nobody could touch him.
His ERA plus was 291. I don't know if you said that.
I didn't even say
like
that.
That's 291. That's
291.
191% better than league average.
In the height of the steroid era. Again, he posted the lowest WHIP the American League had seen, you know, from the year they lowered to the mound until I think Bieber's season 2 seasons ago. Like, that's how dominant it was in the AL in the height of the steroid era as it was really getting going. And he was the only pitcher in the league, qualified pitcher that year, to post an ERA below 2.5, and his was 1.74. That tied Ron Guidry's for the lowest since they lowered the mound in the AL in 1978. Like, it was just that dominant of a season. Let's go to Matt on 355. Hey, Matt. Matt. Going once.
Hey, guys.
Hey, there you go.
Hey, sorry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I've got the solution for the sticky stuff. I don't know. I'm sure you guys have held a Major League Baseball, but in addition to there being that sheen on there, the laces are just non-existent.
Yeah.
And if you go into lower levels, like collegiate sports and high school sports, the seams are a lot higher.
We had a guy yesterday who pitched in college who said the exact same thing, that there's a definite difference in the laces between a big league ball and the college ball.
And it would be uniform across the league, right? So, I mean, it would be, everybody would have that advantage.
So you're saying if they would make that one uniform thing, okay, yeah, you know, but there are differences between college. They use aluminum bats in college. Obviously can't do that in the pros. But yeah, that the ball thing is interesting. Matt, thanks. And remember the picture we had yesterday?
Do you remember when they redid it, or they went and told the manufacturers, we want a different baseball?
Yeah. I still love Pete Alonso's theory. That's the best conspiracy theory I've heard. Bruce is in Streamwood. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? How you guys doing?
Great. How are you?
Enjoying a beer, getting ready for my wedding that's happening on Friday.
Hey, so, you know. Congratulations.
Yeah. Much appreciated. No, I was calling because I wanted to talk to you, Carm, and say you had an awesome point about how everyone was cheating in baseball. So when the hell are they going to let Pete Rose get into the Hall of Fame? That was the reason why I wanted to call in on that and make that point. And that's it. Hey, keep doing what you guys are doing. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it, and have a great wedding. Pete Rose broke like the cardinal sin. I don't know what to tell you. Do I think Pete, like, on merit, of course. You know, we know it. Do I
really care? Hey, I don't like put him right. in. If you ask me, like I put him in, but like it's baseball.
To me, the Hall of Fame, the Hall of Fame's a joke without Pete Rose.
Yeah.
So whatever they're doing in the summer in New York, God bless you, have some fun. But I don't care because without Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, the Hall of Fame's a joke. A
couple Twitter nominations for Arrieta's 2015 campaign is one of the great dominant pitching seasons.
22,
especially the second half. I mean, that was like when it was really
his OPS plus was only 215 in that year.
Only. Jeez. Only, I mean, 215.
Well, compared to some of the gaudy numbers you're throwing out there.
Well, Pedro's was 219 in that 2000 season. Well, so that's Jake's season in 15 would certainly be in the running. That was an all-timer. And what he did from the All-Star break on, it was like, are you kidding me? David Faraday with an open U.S. Open preview from Torrey Pines when we come back next.
It's Carmen and Yurko.
Sports talk while you're on the clock.
Do I exaggerate?
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
All right, golf's third major is this weekend. Can Phil do it? Can he do it? Can he pull off back-to-back at 50? Some book just took like a seven-figure bet I read on Phil. Is that right? Did I see that right? Somebody went in there, seven-figure, dropped a couple of commas and said, yeah,
give me lefty
at like 40-1. I thought I saw that this morning. I'll double-check.
That's a big number, Carl.
Oh, my God. Mod on.
Well, I got a couple of horses out there. One of them's the one coming back from COVID.
All right. He's got a
point.
Rahm?
Yeah, he's got a point to prove.
Carl. You and Merck are going to give your pick. We'll do the show pick in a little bit. We got one of the experts with us. He'll be all over the coverage. And it's great to have him because I think he's one of the most entertaining and insightful golf commentators out there. And he's got the best accent on TV. David Faraday joins us to get ready for the
U.S. Open. I was
going to
say, is Peter Alice joining us?
Well, Peter Alice has a pretty damn good accent, too, but I like David's better. David, what's up, man?
Everything is up. It's fantastic. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
It's got to be great to have fans back, right? Like in these galleries, to have people back as everything is sort of reopening. I mean, it adds extra juice to these tournaments, and these players have to feed off of it, don't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially the U.S. Open. I mean, it feels like a major championship again.
Absolutely. All right, so how is Torrey set up? This is the first time since 08, if I'm not mistaken, the great Tiger Rocco run in 2008. Give us a little lowdown real quick on the course, what we should expect, and if it will be at all different in its playing style from 2008.
Well, it's 7,650 yards long at sea level, and if you hit it off the fairway, it's like trying to hack it off a dead llama. It's a typical U.S. Open golf course, you know, where it's going to be long and hard. That's for sure. I don't think it's going to be a golf course where, you know, you can go with the Bryson DeChambeau method of just, like, rip it as far as you can and then try and get it on the green. Because the thing is, you know, if you do miss the fairway, even the layup shots just short of the green, you know, are very tight where, you know, they've narrowed the fairways down in front of the green. So I think it'll be someone who'll hit fairways that'll win this week.
Does Bryson care that it might not be? You could just let me just rip it and get it over all the trouble and I'm going to do what I do? Like, does he even care? Will he still go out and just try to do that and expect to win?
I think he's smart enough where you won't see him hit driver everywhere here. He would like to go ahead and hit it everywhere, that's for sure. But I think he's smart enough to realize, you know, how narrow it is in front of the greens. And, it's one thing knocking it up there 150 yards short of the green in these enormously long par fours. But when you can't hit the fairway even with your second shot, that makes a huge difference. Mm.
David Faraday's our guest, talking U.S. Open, be all over NBC's coverage. We love it. In this part of the country, when it's out west, we get primetime golf over the weekend for a major. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Speaking of Bryson, I guess he turned down maybe an opportunity to play with Brooks. What's up with this rivalry? I mean, like, how real is it? And would that have been good for the weekend if they would have been paired together in the first two rounds?
For me, it's like listening to two fleas arguing about the dog that they think they own. I'm not sure if it's good for the game. I mean, it's good fun, I think, for the rest of us, you know, to see, these two go at it. And, yeah, I mean, I would like to have seen them playing together purely from a human point of view to see whether or not one of them. I'm picking Bryson in a fight. Oh, sorry, I'm picking Brooks in a fight.
Yeah, I think I probably would. Although Bryson's a pretty big dude. Is that just like a mentality thing over a physical thing?
They're like a couple of silverbacks.
Going
at it.
Yeah, I don't think I'd mess with Brooks Koepka. I agree.
No, he's a monster.
All right, you talked about it. You talked about being in the fairway. You talked about being greens in regulation. Colin Morikawa led the tour, or is leading the tour this year in greens in regulations. He's 12 in fairways. Is that the combination you're looking for? But he doesn't.
Yeah.
Does he have the distance off the tee to be able to go ahead and match that?
Yeah, he does. There's no question. I mean, there's a couple of guys that I really like this week. Colin Morikawa is one of them, and Xander Schauffele is the other. He's a local boy. He plays well in majors, and he's played very well here at Torrey Pines in the past. You know, so it's, you know, horses for courses. I think, you know, Colin Morikawa has played very well on the West Coast. He's at home here. Mm-hmm. And the other youngster that I think has got a great chance is Victor Hovland.
Mm. We talked about $1 million bet being put on Phil Mickelson.
I thought I saw that. Yeah, now, I'll double check.
After the redesign, doesn't Phil Mickelson hate this version of the course?
No, I'm not sure. He's still incredibly long. Phil, really flexible and kind of elastic. He's one of those Vijay Singh sort of swings where it's real long and real athletic. He can still get it out there, you know, and of course, you know, from the thick rough around the greens, there's nobody better. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him. I mean, it would surprise me to see him win, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him contend, you know, get into the shakeup at least.
Hmm. David, he's in better shape now than he was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at the pictures, it's,
oh my heavens,
it's kind of stunning. But like athletes,
he had a little Colin Montgomery going on with him for a while there.
He had the pair of moves.
Yeah. But like athletes at all levels, in all sports, I mean, they really do train differently. They understand fitness. They understand diet probably more than anything better. So like, will it become more of a common occurrence where we see these guys well into their 40s, maybe pushing 50, where they're competing and possibly winning major championships?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the tendency has been over the last few years, you know, where you get guys like Rory McIlroy who ended up ripped. You get people like Adam Scott who turns 40. I think he's 40 this year, who's liable to contend. I think, you know, and Phil has shown, you know, that it's entirely possible, you know, to get out there and win. I mean, Tiger has done the same thing.
Yeah. All right, before we get a pick, and a few other questions here. Best guest ever on Faraday on your show on the Golf Channel?
Oh, boy, the best guest. That's a tough one. You know, I mean, I would say Condoleezza Rice. Mm. I just adored her. You know, she was a talented figure skater, a concert pianist, and secretary of state.
Yeah.
You know, all from growing up in a the era of segregation. Just an astonishing person.
Yeah, she's pretty accomplished. Toughest guest. Who was the hardest guest to interview?
Larry David.
That makes sense. Yeah. I could totally see that.
He's distracted all the time.
Well, Larry, it was like interviewing a broken mirror. You know, I'm as paranoid and as, you know, delusional as he is, you know, so I really enjoyed it, but it was a tough one.
Yeah, I bet. You got to work hard in that one. So you said Victor Hovland you like. I heard you mention Xander. Like, who's the actual pick? Who wins this thing, David?
Yeah, I think Xander, for me, is the favorite. As good as he is on this golf course, as good as he is in the West Coast, and as well as he has played, you know, in major championships, I'd pick him. And I'm sitting here with Billy Walters, who is maybe the world's biggest sports gambler.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, Billy likes, he kind of likes Xander as well.
I kind of like it too, then, because Billy's about as successful as any of them. So that's a good little tidbit. Good nugget.
Hey, does the South African that won last week have a chance to win this week?
Yeah, sure. You know, when you're in form like that, you know, sometimes it can carry over. And he has played amazingly in the last few events he's played in, you know, so yeah, sure. I'd give him a chance.
All right, David, we'll be watching. Have a great week out there, and you're the man. Thanks for joining us. All right.
All right. Thanks, Karma. Thanks, Urkel.
Talk to you. There's David Faraday from Golf Channel and NBC. I do love his voice. That show was great. That show's always not doing Faraday anymore, I guess. That show always Merkin like never missed an episode. Did he say like two fleas arguing over who owns the dog? I mean, these guys, I don't know where they come up with them, but that was brilliant. Okay, so he thinks Xander, and Billy Walters likes Xander. I'm going to go check the Xander odds right now. He's probably, what, 14, 15 to 1,
yeah,
I'm guessing?
Yeah, he'd be in that group.
Yeah? All right, who do you guys like?
I'm John Rahm.
You're John Rahm in it.
And he's not really a long shot, but I bet you can get him at 30 to 1 is Scheffler.
Scotty Scheffler?
Scotty Scheffler. There you go.
Ooh, I kind of like that
pick. So Scheffler at 45 to 1. You know, I looked real quick at the stats and guys that can keep the ball in the fairway. The PGA average is 60% keeping the ball in the fairway. Morikawa is at 72%. He's also 12th in greens in regulation.
I like where
in the U.S. Open, I like to keep both of those kind of into play.
Yeah.
Guys that are in the fairway, guys that are on the green. And at 7,600 yards, these guys are kind of accustomed to playing that kind of silly length.
Yeah.
So Morikawa in this type of test is somebody that can't be overlooked. But, man, I think John Rahm is motivated.
I can get Xander at 20 to 1. John Rahm's the favorite, 10 to 1. All right, Merck, who do you like?
Boy, I love Xander until they both picked him because now I'm nervous because you hate going with the pick everyone's going with, right?
I don't know that everyone is. I mean, Faraday and Billy, it sounds like, are. Billy Walters.
All right, so I love Xander. I'm with Yurko and Scotty Scheffler as well. I kind of like that at 45.
40 to 1. Yeah.
That's a good price.
A couple other guys I like. Sam Burns at 90 to 1.
Look at you, long shot.
Gary Woodland, I believe, is 100 to 1. And
big hitter, the llama. Long.
Lee Westwood is 125 to 1. Now, back in 2008, he finished third there, but I know it's a long time
ago.
So I guess we have to discuss, decide by the end of the show who we're going to go with.
Let's make sure.
Carm, what do you like?
I like what you said about Morikawa. He won a major out in California last year. It's his home state. I kind of like Morikawa. I could get on board with with Xander. I've picked Xander in a lot of these, figuring he's going to win one soon.
Viking Scott's chiming in. If I could put his two picks in right now,
sure,
and maybe get Randy's kind of thoughts on that. He likes Jason Cockrack.
Yes, who doesn't like Jason Cockrack?
And Patrick Reed are his two choices.
Patrick Reed won there earlier this year. He's, I think, 28 to 1 or 23 to 1.
Kind of like that.
Yeah. I don't love Cockrack, but I do love Patrick Reed.
Did I pronounce that wrong when I said
it's not Cockrack?
It's
Cockrack.
Oh, I apologize.
That's right. I thought you were making it funny.
No.
I don't know if coming up after noon, remember, we have an extra 30 minutes. We're
going
to play the Sylvie exchange with Matt Nagy on the Zoom from yesterday, and we're still all trying to figure out what exactly Matt Nagy said. We'll be right back. Hey, this hour is brought to you by NJ Diet. Lose 20 to 40 pounds in only 40 days, contractually guaranteed. Visit njdiet.com.
Stream ESPN 1000 anytime through the ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
No sleep till...
There's going to be two fighters now at the center of the ring just wailing on each other the rest of the way. Three ball, Durant, good from up top. And for the first time since it was 2-0, the Brooklyn Nets have a lead in this game. 38 for Kevin Durant. Durant again, this time off the right angle, a deep three. Brooklyn leads at 97-96, make it 41 for Kevin Durant.
Kevin's got to come up and get the ball if he wants it.
He does. He comes all the way to Harden, steps to the three-point line, shoots for three, and drilled it! 109-105.
Rock on his back, one dribble, and a bang to three.
Let's just let the music play.
Very melodious.
I mean, it's a great song. Plus, Yurko brought in a big thing of fried calamari from Joe's.
Yeah.
Seafood, prime steak, and stone crab.
All the food's in the back.
I'm eating and
I need
listening to No Sleep for Brooklyn.
I need to get a charger back there, and I saw Mike Thomas. And he goes, we got some food that's being delivered. I says, let's go
grab some more.
Let me kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
So what I did was I got my battery recharger for the computer and picked up a little calamari at the process.
Let's go get some more in the next break. Last night might have been the greatest postseason performance for a player that has accomplished a whole heck of a lot. I mean, say what you want. Oh, I don't like you left OKC. Okay, fine. guy saw an opportunity to play with like an all-time team. They could pay him a lot of money, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to go do that. You know, but we bitch and complain in sports when guys leave for better jobs. You don't do it in any other walk of life. But, okay, maybe you don't like Durant. But he's accomplished a whole heck of a lot, and
yeah.
He's one of the great scorers the game's ever seen, whether you want to admit that or not. He certainly is. I think even the people that don't like him can admit that. Like, with all he's accomplished, as long as he's been in the league, that was his magnum opus last night, wasn't it? I mean, he played all 48.
Masterpiece?
Yeah, it was his magnum opus. He played all 48 minutes. He scored 49 points. He scored 20 in the fourth quarter when his team had to complete a ridiculous, you know, double-digit comeback. He had 17 rebounds. He had 10 assists. He had 3 steals. He had 2 blocks. He scored from distance, like hard, difficult, contested threes. He drew double teams and found the open man. He scored attacking the basket. He scored working off of baseline curls. He scored going into the post. He scored when he had to get the ball at half court and just get ahead of steam.
Was Harden to help like, as a decoy? Was Harden to help just as a guy being on the court? That might be a theoretical option.
Maybe a little. That's a good point. He played 46 minutes on one leg.
Right.
I think James Harden knows that he cannot run. He cannot, or that hamstring is going to pop.
Pop, yeah.
He basically jogged
for
40.
He'll be Nick Madrigal.
Yes.
Yeah.
He didn't make a shot, did he? Yeah. Or he didn't make a three. I know that. How many? Did he make one field goal? He might have made one. He didn't make a three. He can't get off the ground.
He was a decoy yesterday.
He was a total decoy for 46 minutes. And then he was guarding Giannis in the post late, and Giannis is trying a fadeaway. Like, Giannis, I love you, man. Like, I think you're great.
Take it at him.
Giannis.
The only thing Harden can do to defend at that point is flop.
Giannis, flop. What are you doing?
I honestly think the fadeaway was a result of his free throw shooting. I think in the fourth quarter when the game is close.
Oh, you think so?
He's reluctant to go because.
That's interesting.
I swear.
You think it's in his head?
Yeah, because like.
Barkley said the same thing last night.
It's one thing, like first or third quarter when he's. Listen, if he misses a free throw, he doesn't want to. It sucks, but there's plenty of game left to go back and get it. But in the fourth quarter, when it's tight and every possession matters, and Giannis, I think he's afraid to go to the free throw line.
Wow. Did you guys notice on the play we're talking about late, didn't Harden, like, wave away Landry Shamet on a double team? Like, Harden told him, get away. Like, that's an interesting point, Miller. Do you think they know that? Like,
I mean, like, unless Harden's like, you know what, if I have to follow him, don't worry about it, I'll follow him.
That's what I'm wondering. Like, does he have it in his mind, like, regardless here, he's either going to do something silly or I'll follow him and we're good. Like, don't come and help. Like, we'll follow him and send him the line.
Don't give him the option to dump off the double team.
Like, he you could see it plain as day. James Harden clearly is telling Landry Shamet to get away from double teaming, and this guy's playing on one leg. That's an interesting. I didn't think about that even.
Well, and
I'm just like in my mind. I'm going like, Giannis, what are you doing?
And then he bumbles it, and you know Middleton drops it off to him, and he fumbles it there.
That's brutal. It's a game that they just look. That's the game that's going to cost Bud the job at the end of the year, right? Like that's it. That's the game that you've got James Harden playing on one leg, and like they barely hunted him. Like go hunt him. What are you doing?
Attack. You go after the weak. Like, that's what you do.
Yes, you
and
go for the weak.
If Harden's out there and he's hurt, you've got to attack Harden. That's the way it works.
Like, this is obvious stuff that happens in nature.
Yeah.
When the lions go on the hunt, Yerk, they attack the small one or the weak one.
They don't
right?
go like, at the biggest, the strongest, and the fattest.
Exactly.
They call the young ones from the herd.
Right. And, Yerko says that all the time. Weak. Like, this is the game that's going to cost Bud his job. Like, this is it. They had to win that game last night, but it was a true masterpiece from Kevin Durant. It was spectacular. I wonder if they like sit Harden now for game 6, knowing they've got game 7.
Did you see Reggie Miller's tweet last night?
Yeah, I wouldn't. He said sit KD. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't goof around. No.
Okay.
I'd try to put him out of their misery in Milwaukee. And now maybe you rest Harden because he's so legitimately hurt, but I would not sit KD.
Was there a difference in the way they called the game yesterday?
No, I don't know.
Not really?
Not really. There's other big potentially breaking NBA news, and there's Sylvie going, I don't want to say going at it, but Sylvie asking pertinent questions to Matt Nagy, and Matt Nagy not knowing how to answer. We'll play all that when we come back in 2 minutes.